Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bit Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
Welcome. It is Social Distance Central, the show with the COVID name. That's not about COVID during the COVID era. I'm Bit Nizar. With me, as always, the voice of the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet 650. It's Brendan Batchelor. Batch, how's your Thursday going? Man, the weeks just fly by now.
Yeah, no kidding. We're almost at the end of week three of Social Distance Central, I believe this would be now. So the time
checks out.
Certainly flown by, but yeah, can't complain. Low-key Thursday morning thus far. Excited to talk about hub cities and training camps and real movement in terms of progression towards the hockey season getting back underway.
For sure. Your thoughts always welcome, 650, 650 on anything that we're talking about, or anything you want to talk about as well. You can also tweet us at Sportsnet 650, at Batch Hockey, and at Bic 650. We're also doing Game of Takes today. We're doing that in about 10, 12 minutes. We got Bailey Broadbent defending the throne and taken on by Shiloh. At Bailey Broadcast and at Shiloh underscore Smith. They're going to be contending for this week's Game of Takes. We gave them Jake Virtanen to talk about, and we got so many responses this week. We unfortunately can only choose two. One, I guess, but so many good ones. So we'll air those, and then you can cast your votes at Sportsnet 650, which should be up very shortly. And we'll find out who the next winner for Game of Takes is. Also, David Amber going to join us at 12:35. Of course, a lot going on with this Hub City talk, and just as we all gear up for returning to play, we should let you know the latest from the NHL and NHLPA. They have agreed on an opening date for formal training camp. So essentially, phase three. Again, they've agreed on the date, which will be Friday, July 10th, provided medical and safety conditions allow the parties of allow it to continue. The length of training camp and then the start of when games could be played, still to be determined. But we know the next date, Batch, July 10th.
Yeah, and that's good news because we had previously learned that that would be the earliest possible date that they could start training camps. So they're remaining on schedule. And to me, this leads me to believe now that we could be playing games before the end of July, just because I think a three-week training camp is probably too long for these guys. I know that a lot of them haven't skated as much as they would have liked through this stretch, but most guys you would imagine are finding a way to get ice now, whether it's some of the teams around the league opening their facilities for phase two and guys being able to come in and skate in small groups, or whether guys are going out and finding their own ice and renting it privately. We're talking about essentially a month away. It's June 11th today. So a month away from training camp starting. So that's, four more weeks that these guys have to work on the ice. I would imagine there are a few rare instances of guys that aren't able to get on the ice, but that would be the exception rather than the rule at this point. So guys have 4 weeks to gear up for a training camp. There's no way that training camp needs to be 3 weeks. When you think about a training camp, normally it's like 4 days in September, and then they get right into the preseason. And we do expect that each team is going to play a couple of exhibition games, but 10 days, 2 weeks, that to me feels like it would be long enough for these guys, just because you got to keep them interested if you're a coach as well. And as much as these guys love playing hockey and they're paid very well to do it, they're not necessarily the most patient of people at times. They're very competitive. And looking at 3 weeks of practicing almost every day is not something that most NHLers would welcome. They'll want to get back into it, get up to speed, get going, and then play games as soon as possible.
And I think this phase, like the phases themselves, work very well. You're talking about guys now being able to find ice themselves with phase two, return to facilities in some cities. That's kind of your prelude to the training camp. So you're right. Does phase three itself need to be that long? Probably not. So it's an encouraging sign that they've agreed on the date.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we'll see what they decide on the length of training camp, and then how quickly they can move from training camp to game action. Obviously, they're going to have to get all these teams to the hub cities, wherever they may be. You know, there's some rumblings over the past 24 hours that Vegas is essentially guaranteed to be one of them. So, you know, if you're the Canucks, whether they hold their training camp in the States, whether they hold it here in Vancouver, you know, you've then got to get the whole team together, you know, the whole traveling party of everyone you're going to take, get them to Vegas or wherever you're going to be playing. I guess there's a chance that you wouldn't have to go anywhere if you're the Canucks, if Vancouver's chosen as a host city. But nonetheless, you're going to have to quarantine or isolate in a hotel, even if you're playing in Vancouver. And then you're getting into preseason. And so, you know, if we conservatively say that training camp would be 10 days to 2 weeks, then, you know, you're getting right to the end of July, probably, by the time the Canucks and the Minnesota Wild could start their five-game play-in series.
The other part of the conversation that's really interesting, obviously, to people in this city, then, is the province, shortly after our show yesterday, announcing that they've eased some regulations when it comes to quarantining for the NHL, and specifically for, you know, for teams that want to play here, if they want to be a hub city for this upcoming playoffs. They are taking measures and to try to create a bubble for them. And they have put forward a proposal alongside with the Vancouver Canucks. And, it was an encouraging thing to hear. If you are part of the camp that wants to be a host city, I think there's a lot of skepticism, which is warranted. But, you know, that also took place yesterday.
Yeah, and so what we're going to see is if Vancouver is chosen as a host city, there still will be a 14-day quarantine period, but teams will be allowed to quarantine together, and they will be allowed to practice or skate. Whether they would be able to play games, I'm not sure. It didn't seem that clear to me when they were talking about it yesterday. But what it means is you're not arriving in Vancouver and having all of your players sitting in their hotel rooms for 2 weeks because they have to be quarantined. You know, it's a big family bubble, they're calling it, that would encompass an entire team. So that is a way that they could get around it. Certainly that's going to be important for the Canucks if they want to have their training camp here. Now that, you know, now that they've made this decision, that is more of an option. Mm-hmm. Whether it means that the NHL looks to bring half the league here, I'm not sure, because, you know, teams are going to be able to skate. They're going to be able to stay together in a hotel. They're going to be able to travel back and forth. But there wasn't clarification about whether multiple teams could be in the building or on the ice at the same time, and whether you could get into the games right away or whether you'd have to spend 2 weeks before you start with two teams playing each other. That could still be a stumbling block for the NHL if it wants to come to Vancouver. But other than that, you know, why wouldn't the NHL want to come here? We've got some of the lowest COVID numbers in the world right now. Bonnie Henry is being given credit in the New York Times and mm-hmm. internationally for the way she's handled this. If you're thinking about the public health and the player and staff health element of this, Vancouver should be right at the top of the list for that anyway. But, you know, there are many other logistics that are going to play into this. And I'm not necessarily sure how highly the NHL is prioritizing that because of the news that we get that it sounds like Vegas is going to be one of the teams or one of the host cities. And Vegas, it seems like from, you know, some things you see on social media, is open for business again. Like casino floors are open.
Yeah.
The Scripps looks like it's busy. That, to me, doesn't necessarily set up for an incredibly safe place to be going. But that said, if you've got an entire hotel blocked off, if all of the meals are going to be contained within that hotel, if you're telling guys, look, you can stay within this complex, but you can't go out on the strip, then in all likelihood, it wouldn't have an impact directly on the players, anything happening outside of that bubble.
And like, there's still a lot of logistical hurdles to overcome, even with, okay, they've agreed on a date on phase three. They've, you know, potentially got some hubs. There's still a lot to overcome, not even just from the health and, and safety measures, but also just do the players feel comfortable coming back, right? You still have to get over that hurdle of, is this right for them? And there was a report even in the NBA yesterday from Adrian Wojnarowski just talking about the players. There are a couple of dozen that are asking themselves of, is this the right thing to do for the overall health of the league and for the overall health of the players? Is it economically viable for them? I'm sure that conversation is going to continue for the NHL players themselves as this gears towards. And as you mentioned, Batch, as these cities kind of get more liberal with their idea of what are we okay with, will they see ramifications upon that? Because I saw those videos from Vegas as well. And like, I hope everything goes well. And they took great measures, you know, plexiglass in between a couple of the seats at bars, only a certain amount of people at poker tables, whatever it is. There's still a fear that, hey, there is a repercussion to doing this and that the spike in cases does happen. And if that does happen, does that change the landscape for what the NHL may consider as far as hub cities?
Yeah, and you would assume as well that if they have, you know, at least behind closed doors, committed to anything with Vegas or committed money, I would imagine that they have left themselves an out if Vegas or any area that they're going to agree to go to sees a second wave or something like that. So
you got to keep the receipt, right?
No, exactly. And I'm sure that there would be specific language in any agreement that the NHL is coming to with any host city or any host hotel or resort or restaurant or anything that gives them an out if cases spike, because you know, that would be a disaster for the NHL to send all their players into a hot spot and then have an entire team or multiple players contract COVID-19, because then you're talking about an employee safety issue, and there would be all sorts of hell to pay with the PA for that, I'm sure.
I'm now picturing Gary Bettman just to be like, can I speak to your manager, please? Well, he's got the receipt in hand trying to get his money back. It is Bicazar, Brendan Batchelor. It's Social Distance Central here on Sportsnet 650. We are doing this thing. You've heard it for the past couple of weeks. We invite your submissions to get into it. We choose two people who we think we have the best takes. It is the game of takes.
When you play the game of takes,
winter is coming.
You either win.
A lion doesn't concern himself with the opinions of a sheep.
Or, well, you know.
Dracarys.
Rally the realm and make your claim to the composite throne. Here's Bic.
I drink, and I know things.
And Batch.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
Valar Morghulis.
Oh, yeah. It is Game of Takes. We've took your submissions. I think the most submissions we got for this one as this continues to grow. And this week we asked our guys to talk about Jake Vertanen and Batchett, and you saw all the replies, Batchett. It was a pretty heated one this week.
Yeah, it certainly was, and good on Bailey for choosing a topic that got people fired up this week as our reigning champion sitting atop the composite throne. He will have a chance to defend that throne here against Shiloh. Jake Vertanen and the topic: do the Canucks keep him? Do they re-sign him as he enters an off-season anyway? I keep wanting to say summer, by the way, but it's off-season this year because it's going to be in like November when free agency hits. But he enters an off-season where he's going to be a restricted free agent. The Canucks have all sorts of decisions to make in terms of how to manage their cap going forward, and he is one of those big decisions. So does he stay or does he go? Bailey and Shiloh are going to contest that debate right now.
Bailey sits top the throne, but first we go to the challengers. This is Shiloh at Shiloh underscore Smith on Twitter. This is his take.
The problem with signing Jake Vertanen right now is that we already have three overpaid bottom six players on the books for two more years. And then players like Markstrom and Toffoli, Levo, McEwen, and Stetcher, they're off the books. And they're going to be looking for raises. And second, they also have to ensure that they're not pricing themselves out of being able to sign Quinn or Pettersson. I mean, they're going to sign those guys no matter what. But if you're spending too much elsewhere, you're going to be getting real tight with the money. Spooner, Barchi, they're going to be freeing up $3 million, so that'll be nice. But the main issue here is not so much about the money. It's that he is far too inconsistent to come out of that bottom six. I mean, he's done some good stuff. He's been on the power play, got a couple of points here and there, but he's not consistently on the power play. He's not playing consistent. And the coaching staff shows their lack of faith in his ability to consistently play on the top lines. His value outside of this team may be greater than what it is inside. And based on the current payrolls that we're paying, we're looking at comparatives of 9 for 3, which is too much for a bottom six player. And we got enough of them. If they can't sign him at $6 million for 3 years, then it'd be better off to trade him.
That's Shiloh @Shiloh_Smith on Twitter with his take on Jake Virtanen. I really like that line of his value outside of the team might be bigger than the value inside the team. So he brought it.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, he talks about not wanting to see Virtanen back unless it's at $2 million per season or less. I certainly don't think that that's a number that Virtanen would come in at. He's probably going to be able to command north of $2 million, especially if it ends up at arbitration. So, Shiloh making a lot of good points. You know, I personally am on that side of the argument with him as well, that his value elsewhere could be higher, potentially. I'm not quite as confident in that as Shiloh is, as opposed to on the team. But the big factor is the money they're spending in the bottom six. And if they don't find a way to get out from underneath contracts like Louis Erickson or Brandon Sutter or Jay Beagle, which I assume are the three guys he's alluding to there, then it doesn't make sense to be spending a ton more on a guy who is going to be a bottom six winger, at least right now, because you're not looking at moving off of Brock Besser, at least in the immediate short term. And I would imagine that the organization would be prioritizing Tyler Toffoli over Jake Virtanen right now.
And it's tough too, right? Because I get the hometown factor, and there's a lot of emotional attachment, as we've talked about this week with the conversation about Chris Tanev. Not that he's hometown, but you know, he's built roots here, obviously, and fans have adopted him as one of their own. Well, here's someone that is one of their own, still burgeoning in his career, obviously, but it's a tough decision. So that's how you stand, Batch. Are you open to having your mind changed if there's a greater take?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what Game of Takes is about. For me, I've been voting on who has the stronger case, even if I don't agree with them.
Right.
It's all about the debate and the argument here. And so if Bailey comes through with a strong take here and some good reasoning as to why he thinks the Canucks need to keep Jake Virtanen in the fold, then I absolutely can be swayed.
Well, here is the champion. We've yet to have a repeat champion, obviously, 3 weeks into this, but he chose a topic. Can he hold off the takes from Shiloh? This is Bailey Broadbent, our champion.
I don't care how overweight Jake Virtanen shows up to training camp next season, as long as that's in a Vancouver Canucks uniform. What everyone saw this year was Jake finally arriving, and the Abbotsford boy needs to be here for the long haul. The time is now for the Canucks to sign Jake Virtanen to a team-friendly, multi-year deal. Say what you want about his draft position, but Shotgun Jake has shown enough to management and this fan base of what they're likely to get, and it's valuable. As Harmon Dial of The Athletic recently examined, Jake Virtanen's developmental arc fits similarly to wingers like Andrew Ladd, Tom Wilson, and Nino Niederreiter, all players good for 20 to 25 goals and 45 to 50 points in their primes. Virtanen's throwing less hits, but in doing so he's become a much more well-rounded player with and without the puck. Despite relatively limited ice time, he's improved his goal, assist, and point totals every year, while becoming a solid middle six forward set to enter his prime. With this in consideration, trading Virtanen should also be out of the question. Across the league, he doesn't carry enough value to warrant a team taking on a bad contract, nor could he bring back a cost-controlled top four defenseman that the team needs. Any short-term deal with Virtanen would force the team's hands into arbitration where he could be priced out and lost for nothing. Or they'd be forced to negotiate in the same summer as Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. The Canucks would be wise to lock up JV in a multi-year deal now. By doing so, they could get Virtanen's best years on a team-friendly deal when they need value the most.
Bealey's got the jokes, man. He's got the jokes.
Man, he was well prepared this week. That is a great argument from Bealey. I will give him a ton of credit. He makes some really good points. And, you know,
both guys brought it strong.
They did. But it does, what Bealey talks about does open my mind to another option that we haven't really discussed because we've been so focused on, do you trade Jake or do you keep Jake? There is a third door, which is you sign him, and as Bealey points out, you sign him to a longer-term team-friendly deal if you can get that done. And then as long as you don't provide him, you know, trade protection, then if it's a friendly contract, that makes him movable down the line too. So it's not necessarily something that you have to make your decision on this offseason one way or the other. And certainly Jake Virtanen coming back is a lot more palatable with some of those other contracts out of the way in the bottom six, as Shiloh pointed out in his take. But it does make you think that, in fact, as much as we get caught in sort of the straightforward thinking of there are only two options, there are, there's some nuance to this, and you don't need to get rid of Jake Virtanen unless you're incredibly worried about the cap implications. And there are other ways to try and wriggle out of those as well.
My one concern about that is, okay, if there is a long-term team-friendly contract and down the road, you're like, oh, okay, this hasn't worked out. The opportunity to move off of him now is based on he's met a certain baseline and there's potential for more. If you're open to moving him down the line on a team-friendly long-term contract, it's because he hasn't lived up to that potential. That's not as alluring to another team at that stage to me. If you're at 25, 26 and he's kind of a 15 goal scorer, do you really want to lock yourself into long term about a guy for a guy like that if there's 2-3 more years left? And the issue with giving long term contracts to potentially bottom middle six guys is you should in theory have a very small core for team building. Even if Jake Virtanen maximizes his game, I'm not sure if he's ever going to break into the core of this team.
No, the other side of that argument, though, is what if he does, right? What if he does become a consistent 20 to 25 goal scorer? What if he does profile like Andrew Ladd at his peak or Tom Wilson? Although I don't think he has the mean streak that Tom Wilson has in him. But
well, okay. What's your definition of core? Because I think we lose the conversation a bit when we start talking about this stuff. Cause I think there's a difference between he's got the talent to be a core player, but like fundamentally when I view core players, I narrow it down to like 5-6 guys. And I know that's tight and small, but those 5-6 guys are the ones who lead your teams, whether it be your number one center, your number two center, your number one D, number two D, and your goalie. That's and even goalie, I'm pretty lenient on not including in core, just how I view team building. So is Jake going to maximize his game to ever be one of the 5 best players on this Canucks team?
No, he's not, but he could be a top 6 winger, I guess, is when I think core, that's what I was meaning, a top 6 winger.
Right.
And if he can be a guy that you can trust to, again, 25 goals, 50 points, finds that consistency in his game, then you can have the conversation that some people already are starting to have in this market. And that's, does Brock Besser become a trade chip that you can use to improve other areas of your team? Like if Jake Virtanen can be that legit top 6 winger that Bailey is hoping he will pan out to be, again, using the Andrew Ladd type comparison, then that does free up options for you to move someone else who maybe would have greater value on the trade market to recoup a higher return. So that's the upside of committing low money to Jake Virtanen, is if he does pan out, then you've got a team friendly top 6 winger and you can use that to your advantage in terms of finding ways to improve other areas of your team. So that's the positive side of it. The best case scenario, the worst case scenario would be that he takes a dip in his performance. He's got a long-term contract that is a little bit more money than he's worth, and there's not a ton of trade value, which could sort of turn the corner towards looking like I don't want to say a Louis Erickson deal because he's not going to be making $6 million, but like a Louis Erickson light deal, where he's a guy that's playing in your bottom six, You know, 15 goals is good, but let's say that to get him long term, you're signing him north of three, maybe even close to 4 million. That's where you go back to Shiloh's argument that they can't afford to be committing that kind of money in the bottom six when they already have some of these other players on high contracts. Now, if they can get out from underneath some of those contracts, then certainly that becomes more palatable. And that's kind of the waters that the Canucks and their management are going to have to navigate here in the offseason.
Who's the guy that signed that long-term contract that it was like for like 2 million? Was it Colton Sissons? He signed like a 7 year deal for like 3 mil.
Off the top of my head, I don't know. Maybe
I think it was him. Yeah, it was. It was 2.875. We just kicked in this year for a 7 year deal. Right. And I just look at that as like, he's never going to be, and I'm not comparing Jake and Colton Sissons together. I'm just like, Colton Sissons is never going to be a core player, but they're locked into him until 2026. I just feel like we would, around the league, we poke fun at those contracts. And the reactions already started to come in. Great take by Bailey from Brad in Surrey, except for the fact, who says Jake wants to sign a longer term team friendly deal? Maybe he wants a decent bump. Also, James chiming in, a lot of exclamation marks for this one. Really nails it. Completely agree with his take on Jake. You can cast your vote as well. The poll and the videos are up at Sportsnet650 on Twitter. We will continue the conversation and talk to David Amber on the way here on Social Distance Central in the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Love me some Hall & Oates here on Social Distance Central. Sportsnet 650, Vic Nizar, Brendan Batchelor. Not too sure what the reference is there, Dom, but I guess someone's getting paid for being rich? Or is this just a Throwback Thursday reference? Dom?
No reference, just throwback.
Okay. It's a good one with Hall & Oates. It's Big Nizar, Brendan Batchelor. Just coming off of that game of takes, we were just talking about the contractual potential for Jake Virtanen. And I mentioned this Colton Sissons long-term contract, which again, like, looks good in theory. It's like, oh, it's a cost control guy if he's going to play in your bottom six. But it just doesn't give you a lot of flexibility. And to me, like, that's what cap management is to me. I'm a big proponent of we tend to conflate what cap space is with just like, oh, just because you've got a lot of money doesn't mean means you can be frivolous with it. You know, the Canucks in theory could have some money, but they've got major requirements coming up with Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. So cap space isn't necessarily an important thing. The more important thing to me is cap flexibility. And contracts like that, Sissons contract, to me, just does not provide you with flexibility, because how many people are looking around the league thinking, boy, I can't wait to shell out five more years, six more years if you want to move out on a player that would feature in your bottom six.
Yeah, although it could still be movable, especially if, and certainly COVID has changed the game with this, but especially if we see the salary cap go up appreciably in the next 5 years, let's say, right? If things bounce back from COVID, if the economy is going well for the NHL, then suddenly 2.8 and a half million, which is what Colton Sissons is making. You know, that's a smaller percentage of the cap that looks a lot more favorable in year six or seven, potentially, of a 7 year deal, assuming that he's still able to perform at a good level than it does right now in year one. Especially with all the implications around COVID and what the salary cap's going to do. But it's interesting to me because Colton Sissons, he's a few years older than Jake Virtanen, he's 26. But he signed this deal coming off a career-high year in the NHL, 30 points in 75 games, 15 goals, 15 assists. Now, Jake Virtanen has already surpassed that. He, you know, has essentially proven over the last few years that he can be a consistent, you know, almost 20 goal scorer, I guess you could say. This year he finished with 18, 18, 36 in 69 games. So if you look at that Sissons contract as a roadmap for what a longer term contract for Jake Virtanen might be like, you're looking probably at close to $4 million if you want to sign him for 5, 6, 7 years. And I just don't know. As much as Jake has improved, I think it's still too early in his career to say that we know exactly what Jake Virtanen is right now. He's had some high highs. You know, he'll score great goals where he'll fly down the wing and fire a shot from the top of the circle past the goaltender, and you'll be like, whoa, you know, this guy could be a legitimate offensive dynamo. But then there have been times where he's disappeared for 5 or 10 games. And, you know, he's gotten better at that. He's rounding out the consistency in his game. But would I want to commit $4-ish million for 5-ish seasons to Jake Virtanen and take him through till he's 28 at that dollar amount? The more I think about it, the less palatable that sounds to me.
We were talking about, you know, building, team building and core members, how big of that core. We bring on one of Sportsnet Core's members. It is David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada host, and also you see him on Hockey Central at Fan 590. David, thanks a lot for joining us. In your philosophy of how you like to see teams build, I was just saying before the break that, you know, I view core members of a hockey team as maybe like 5 to 6 players deep at most. How do you see it?
Hey guys, Brendan, Bick, thanks for having me on. You know what, 5, 6. I think if you're a championship team, I think it's going to have to run deeper than that. Yeah, your nucleus, sure, is going to be, you know, your star players are generally going to be 4 or 5 guys. But, you know, if you look at St. Louis from last year, you look at Washington, you know, Washington has the Ovechkins and the Backstroms and the John Carlson and the Holtby and the Kuznetsov. But remember, they won the championship because of guys like Tom Wilson, guys like Devontae Smith-Pelly, guys like Lars Eller, who scored the most pivotal goals in that Stanley Cup final series versus Vegas. It's just the notion of being able to run with 3 or 4 guys. I think that's a bit of an antiquated notion at this point. It seems you need to almost be 1 to 20. And as cliche as that sounds, you have to be as concerned with what your third and fourth line role players can do with as much as what your star players can do. Because oftentimes we see guys, the star players negate one another, right? I mean,
right.
You get these great stars, and it really comes down to, all right, well, whose third line is less of a high-risk line to be out there? Which third line could be more of a shutdown line, and I can trust to tap them on the back, they go out there, and we're not going to come back down a goal. So I think it runs a bit deeper than that. And as far as building a team, I mean, I'd love to think the whole notion of, you know, draft well, develop, and away we go. It's hard for GMs today, though, because you just don't have the lifeline to do that. You don't have a 6, 7, 8, 10-year window generally to just take there and start a team, not from scratch, but start a team at the beginning of a rebuild and move forward. So you have to have some luck. You have to make some good, smart trades, and you have to have some guys come out of nowhere. You have to be able to bring up guys through the system who aren't first and second round draft picks, who are 6th round draft picks, or guys you pick up off the waivers, and suddenly they do things for you, and you go, wow. You know, we're getting a lot more value out of this guy than we anticipated. I think that's the only real way to win a championship in the NHL today.
Yeah, certainly some guys outside of that bubble of 6 I'm talking about are, you know, guys you develop through your own system and all that. But to me, those other 14, 15 guys, you've got to be more flexible in your conversations with. And the guy we were talking about is Jake Virtanen. And just that, you know, where he can go in his career, it seems like he's found a foothold of, like, he's clearly a third line style player. I understand GMs like it's the most difficult part of the job is projecting the future. You know, in your conversations with GMs and execs, does that often come up as, you know, where the pitfalls are? They made a bad bet of what they thought a player was going to become?
Yeah, I mean, it really is a gamble. And here's the thing. There's sure things, you know, in the sense of we kind of know what Pettersson is and what he's going to become. And barring something unforeseen, this guy is a franchise-type player. You know, there's guys less risky. You knew with Bo Horvat, you know, you might not be that 30-goal guy, but you knew there were so many other tangible things he's bringing to the plate for your team that it's important to sign him and to sign him at a big dollar figure. You're right. Jake Virtanen is a bit of an enigma. He's got all the requisite tools you'd like. You drafted him high. You have all these great expectations for him. But, you know, the numbers haven't necessarily bared out. You know, he comes in at, what, a buck and change right now, $1 million plus. you know, right, are you gonna pay him for the potential? Well, that's dangerous when you have to try and find a way to pay Markstrom, find a way to pay Pettersson in a year. You're going to have to pay Brock Besser down the road. You know, there's other guys who might be more pressing, certainly re-signing Tyler Toffoli. So I think it's like any business. You're going to have your priorities, and you're going to say priority A is signing Markstrom. Okay, what's that number going to look like? How much wiggle room do we have here? Priority B is going to be re-signing Toffoli, or whatever the case may be for Jim Benning. He has to go through that laundry list with the other senior management executives with the Canucks and decide. And how can you get flexible? How can you get creative? And I think that is more incumbent now than ever on the GM's guys, is how can you find some flexibility by being creative? And, you know, I live in Toronto in a marketplace where that's been called upon to Kyle Dubas by giving these fairly, you know, substantial contracts to Marner and Matthews and Tavares and Nylander. So you're now eating up more than half your cap, or essentially half your cap, on four guys. How do you fit the other 16 guys in and have any value, you know, any guys who are of any value? So you have to get creative. You have to find those diamonds in the rough. And I think with Jake Virtanen, you're right. You don't want to get nailed into a price point that's too high and then pay the price by not being able to fill in the other blanks that you need to build a championship team.
David Amber of Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada with us here on Sportsnet 650. And we get the news earlier today, July 10th for training camps, which we previously had heard was going to be the earliest possible date that camps would get underway. So this announcement from the NHL and the PA today has to be really good news for everyone hoping that hockey can get back underway in the summer and get back on schedule.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, here's the thing, fellas. There's a ton of logistical hurdles still to climb here. But the fact is, the players wanted to have a definitive date. Like, when do we formally start training camp? What is our target here? And now they can say, hey, I've got essentially a month of these informal training sessions at my facility or wherever I am to get ready to actually hit the ice with all my teammates on July 10th. So the players wanted a definitive date. There's a lot to be worked out between now and then. We don't know where the hub cities are. We don't know about the Canadian quarantine situation. You know, we don't know exactly how the bubbles will work even. You know, there's a lot to be determined, but at least this is the next step. And I think the NHL was very eager to get that step moving forward. And the PA, of course, has to sign off on all this. So that's another hurdle that needs to be met. But, you know, little by little, it's inching closer to what would be a fantastic finish line for NHL fans. You know, the question is, can we get there?
And the length of training camp still to be determined. Have you heard anything in terms of rumblings or where that length of training camp may come in? Because at one point, 3 weeks was floated. But, you know, when you look at the context now that these guys are essentially going to have 4 weeks to get ready for the start of training camp, you know, in a normal season, training camp would be 3 or 4 days and then guys would be right into the exhibition season. I can't imagine that they'd be looking at as long as 3 weeks, but you know, what are you hearing about that?
Well, it's a great question. And I just, in the last hour, taped an instant analysis with our insiders, Chris Johnston and Elliot Friedman. And here's, I asked that exact question. And what they told me is what they've heard is that with this month lead up to the formal training camps in phase three, they're going to leave it to the players to decide. So the players ultimately will say, we need this much time to feel comfortable to jump into a Stanley Cup playoff situation. But ideally, what Elliott's been hearing and what Chris Johnston's been hearing is that they'll need 2 weeks of training camp. So that would go from the 10th essentially to the 24th. And then essentially 1 week in the hub city where they would play those two exhibition games before ramping up to the playoffs. So if you want to count the exhibition games as part of training camp, that's a 3 week window. And there you have it. Puck would drop on the Stanley Cup playoffs, essentially July 31st, August 1st. So that's what it sounds like at this point is the planned idea. 2 week training camp, 6 days in the hub, getting acclimated and playing those two exhibition games, and then puck drop. Here we go. 24 teams chase to the finish.
Imagine, you know, we focus on the idea of guys getting out of shape and, okay, they need some time to get back into it. But I imagine the longer time would hopefully be more of a benefit to, like, team chemistry, being able to practice all that time. Because it's not as if we're comparing this to the start of the season and you get to spend 82 games getting ready for the playoffs. You kind of got to be clicking on all cylinders as soon as it starts. So, yes, I would like to see games back as quick as possible. Maybe it's not necessary for guys to have that time to get into shape, but there's a team benefit to having a longer training camp.
such an unprecedented case, guys. This is the thing. I was on Hockey Central today with Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart, and I sort of threw that out to them. I was like, well, do they really need all this time? And they said, look, it's going to be 120 days between the pause happened on March 12th, right? The NHL announced on March 12th, we can, you know, we're shutting down business and we'll resume when we can resume. July 10th is 120 days. You know, that's basically a full off season for teams that don't make the playoffs, right? You get eliminated first week in April and you come back, you know, sort of mid-September. It's the same amount of time. So this is really unprecedented. How rusty they're going to be, how healthy they're going to be, you know, are they more susceptible to injuries? These are all great questions. I think the players are going to answer these questions when they get back, and I think they're going to make it clear to the league, we're not compromising our health. We want to go and put on a proper showcase. We want to be, you know, ready to battle for, you know, the most difficult trophy to win in all of sports. So I think there's a lot of questions there, and I think that's what's going to make this dramatic and compelling theater for all of us. I mean, I don't think there's any, you know, there'd be any strangeness if a six seed, a seven seed. I mean, these teams could go and do some damage. Less so than ever, I think the seeding really matters because, remember, there's a ton of injured players also coming back. Like Jacob Markstrom, you have to imagine, is coming back now healthy, ready to go. You know, Vladimir Tarasenko, Dougie Hamilton. You know, and the list goes on and on. It's sort of changed the parameters. For the first time ever, we're probably going to see teams essentially 100% healthy, 24 of them, fighting for the Stanley Cup. So I'm very interested to see how it shakes down, and I think we won't know a lot of these answers to some of these great questions you guys are posing until the guys hit the ice and we start to see things shake down.
Yeah, David Amber with us for a couple more minutes here on Sportsnet 650. The other big question, of course, that continues to swirl is the hub cities. There have been some rumblings that Vegas is probably going to be one of them. And, you know, from a Canadian perspective, we saw the provincial government here in British Columbia yesterday alter their application of the quarantine rules to mean that an entire team could quarantine together and travel back and forth from their hotel to the rink to be able to skate. I have to imagine that is a big step in the right direction in terms of Vancouver potentially being considered as one of these cities.
Yeah, one thing that Chris Johnston said, and I thought it was very interesting, is he's hearing that, like you're exactly what you're saying, they want to have the training facilities of that team included essentially in the team's bubble. So if you know, whatever the example is, if Pettersson, I assume, is he out in Sweden, Pettersson?
Yes, he is.
You know? Okay, yes. So he comes back. Within that 14-day quarantine, he doesn't have to just sit in his room. He could essentially use his room and the team facilities, you know, his house and the team facilities as part of his bubble, provided he's not going out and going shopping and, you know, integrating himself into society. But they could essentially use the team facilities as part of their bubble as something that's being discussed. And if that's the case, it would open the door for the Canadian teams to have their training camps on July 10th be in their home cities, their home provinces. If that's not the case, and you do have this 14-day quarantine situation, it could be a very different scenario, and they might have to look to American cities to house them in the interim. It would just be too difficult for the American players and everyone else coming up to the city to make it logistically work. So that's something else that's being hammered out right now. And if they can hopefully get that addressed, then it'll be much easier for Vancouver, Montreal, Toronto, etc., for those players to go to their home cities, use their home facilities as they begin phase three on July 10th.
He is David Amber. You can follow him on Twitter at David Amber. Actually, just giving some thought to what you just said about playoff seeding. You know what's weird is we praise this tournament so much. It's like, oh, it's the hardest one and anyone can win. And here we are talking about like, oh, if a six seed wins it, there's going to be an asterisk because they shouldn't maybe have been in there in the first place. We should almost be promoting doubling down on the idea that how tough this tournament is. You can't have two different theories on how great this tournament is and then discount what it is of what this tournament might look like this year.
Yeah, this whole idea of there being an asterisk, I think I really don't subscribe to that at all. I just think it's bogus. I mean, I think they played 85% of the regular season. I think they've been more inclusive than they had to be, even in the Stanley Cup playoffs. There's not a team that has a gripe, well, we were right there and you didn't include us in the playoffs. That would have happened had they said 16 teams. That would have been, whether it was Vancouver, Winnipeg, Nashville, someone would have had a grievance there and said, well, we were right there. You know, Nashville won three games going into the break. They would have said, we were right there. How can you exclude us? They've been more inclusive. And as you mentioned, there's five rounds. It used to be four rounds to win the Stanley Cup. This year, because of the imperfect nature of this pandemic, obviously, it's now five rounds for, you know, conceivably for any of these teams to win a Stanley Cup. I wouldn't put an asterisk at all on it. They're all under the same circumstance of having this incredibly long layoff. It doesn't benefit one team generally more than another team. So, you know, where there's not an asterisk, but where you can say, okay, there is a difference is, you know, the Boston Bruins, they win the President's Trophy. There's no home ice advantage for them. Yes, they'll have last change or whatever the case may be. They can match lines. But, you know, having to walk into the TD Garden in a game seven and have to win there, granted St. Louis did that last year, but having to do that is not an easy thing. So, yes, we don't have the home ice advantage that we've had in the past, but I would certainly say to anyone putting an asterisk here that they're completely out of line. When this two-month marathon's done and someone's crowned Stanley Cup champion and you've seen the attrition, you've seen the work that's gone into it, and you see, you know, how physically and emotionally demanding it's been, I think everyone will say, yes, they deserve to be champions.
Hockey Night in Canada host and NHL and Sportsnet, David Amber. Thanks a lot, David. Stay safe, man.
You guys as well. Thanks for having me on, and it's good to know. July 10th, we ramp it up and then really get excited for the potential of Phase 4, which would be puck drop, which would be great.
Yeah, thanks, David.
Cannot wait. He is David Amper. We got to go. Batchman, I can't talk today. We were doing tongue twisters like right before the show. I was failing all over the place.
And my all-time favorite, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen picked a peck of pickled peppers. How many pecks of pickled peppers did... Oh, see, I screwed it up. I'm normally so good, and now I do.
You normally
crush
that one. Yeah. So I must have used all my capabilities before the show. Game of Takes up right now at Sportsnet 650. Bailey Broadbent, the champion, currently leading, but you can change it. Have a listen. What take do you like best? As the two guys discussed, Jake Virtanen, Shiloh Smith at Shiloh _ Smith, the other competitor. The votes are coming in, and you know we've had a couple of texts also coming as well. That Leaf Roland chiming in. Nashville had success with that contract model with Kale Järnkrok instead of Jake or Colton Sissons for a Jake Virtanen comparable.
Yeah, and it's there are lots of comparables out there. I don't have Järnkrok's contract in front of me right now. Just give me a second to pull it up. But Sissons is a little bit older. Järnkrok, $2 million average over 6 years, so that's $12 million. That's you're not going to get Jake Virtanen on that term for that money. It's just not going to happen. He's a guy that A will feel he can command more money, and you know, you look at the comparables there. Virtanen has already surpassed Kale Järnkrok's career high in points in a season. So, you know, in an ideal world, would you love to have Jake Virtanen on a $2 million AAV for 6 years? Yeah, absolutely you would. I just don't see it being a possibility.
Reach deep on the way. Dan Riccio, Randeep Janda, Jeff Merrick going to join them. Also, Willie Mitchell, part of their Stanley Cup conversations on the way here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.